Actually, this sums up my thoughts, and I would like to give the floor to Victor Miziano, because Victor Miziano is immediately related to problems of education. For example, I have been reading Diploma, written by the graduates of Moscow University, whose scientific supervisor was Victor Miziano. And these were excellent pieces of work, because they were not dedicated to Yepin or Malevich. Instead, they were dedicated to problems of contemporary art of the 1990s, which unfortunately is rather an exception to the rule, not so typical of the Moscow University or, say, the Department of Art and other educational establishments. Besides, Victor, some 12 or 18 months ago, published an article in the magazine dedicated to education, and where he could discuss these problems with many people. It features an excellent article by Robert Fleck, who at that time headed the academy in France. Nowadays he's not director of the, he's now head of the museum in Hamburg. But the article just highlights how well he can, he's aware of modern education, and he talks about alternatives to academic education. So if we talk about publishing, Victor is actually known in publishing circles, and Hoche is the name that this publishing house is publishing house is known by, and suppose we should know this author and others and other books that he published. All right, Vic, so you've got the floor. Well, thank you, Victor. Thank you, Sasha. I realized that when I was opening the conference, I sort of rethought my original ideas. I now became aware of the importance of the speaker who opened the conference, who addressed the conference first with a keynote address. That is why I gave it a mission of some sort of introduction into this problem, in just identifying, say, some aspects of the issue of education and art, its history, context, and its link with the Russian artistic experience. I suppose it's very relevant. I would like to thank the organizers for an opportunity to address this conference and to be the first keynote speaker. This is not a regular rhetoric when the keynote speaker thanks organizers. In point of fact, it is a very important and responsible mission, because to be the first speaker in this country to speak at this public dispute, public discussion of issues pertaining to artistic education, it's some sort of very important in history. It's like a threshold, milestone that determines the situation, because the artistic discussions have shown that the discussions and analysis of contemporary artistic education and during the principles of artistic education is usually a synthesis, a some sort of synthetic extraction from a certain period in the development of the artistic situation. It is a synthesis of a certain artistic experience. Bologna Academy of Art has summarized the art in Renaissance, just as others have done it for the first wave of avant-garde, the Dusseldorf Academy for post-war art, and so on and so forth. It means that if we discuss the problems of artistic education today, it means that we're summing up a certain period in artistic development. I suppose the very fact that up to this day we haven't set up an interesting, holistic, interesting, proven doctrine of artistic education is not something that testifies to some social economic conditions. Things are usually explained by lack of funds. In point of fact, this is not the only reason. First of all, we're talking about the conceptual unripeness of the situation in terms of the very fact that the artistic dynamics has not reached the stage of development, I should say, the stage of maturity. just the status of development, where we could talk, say that things that it has some sort of internal paradigmatic foundation make it possible to deduce a certain artistic doctrine. Well, Sasha mentioned this issue of the artistic legacy. I would like to say that at the warehouse we have few copies of the old issues, because the circulation is not that high, we run out of copies pretty soon. But this issue, we have quite a few copies. It was one of the most sensitive issues in terms of, as well as the sensitive was the issue that we tried to sum up back in the USSR. It was really so painful to set up to compile the first one. But because of Mr. Putin and his new political course have really made it more relevant faster. And this, the preparation of this issue really was painful, and I have an impression that it's not one of our best. And actually, I'm not that concerned. I fingered through this magazine. I realized that this issue was pretty good and listed something pretty worthy. I really found out very, very important things. But I suppose the relevance of this issue, even in my own perception, has not been shaped even in my own opinion. I suppose it gives us reasons to start this discussion about the problems of artistic education today. Nevertheless, let us think, what immediate experience, what is the set, what is the framework for raising today's artistic situation, if we could talk about the reform of artistic education, creating the premises for reform. First of all, we're talking about Soviet-type artistic education. What we have, what we know, and what is pretty well known every day, is the avant-garde educational education. We're talking about the Hutemas, when in the 60s, in the 70s, have seen the publication of quite a lot of materials, the huge institute, UNITER Institute, that was focused on denoting and analyzing the art of the period. But I suppose people say, look, there is no sharp contrast between the Soviet and the mass system of education is not really that pronounced. I suppose those people who link the Russian, the Soviet experience with post-revolutionary avant-garde experience are right. Russian artistic education is in many ways closed.
It somehow dominated on the academic heritage, educational academic heritage, but I think that the matrix was the same. I mean that in the Soviet schools and in the cult mass culture, teacher or professor somehow passed on to his students some universal models, universal tools. For instance, during the Soviet period of time, the Soviet art school, for example, returned back to the work with some compositions to the clay, and at the same time the experience of didactism was also somehow mandated. So we witnessed the return to the classical works. This system of education was based on the mimesis, on the mimicry, so to say. Mimicry practice. It meant that we should mimic some principles, some methodologies, or copy them, or clone them, or as Viktor Shklovsky, one of the fathers of the Russian modernism, said, we should copy them. So it seems that this very apology of the gesture, of the tool, of the universal tool as a basis of the education, I think this very principle was the most dominating, and now it is not adequate. So in the context of our previous experience, art experience, we can speak about the art school by Taraganyan. So the main concept of this school was genius, actually, because it, for example, turned upside down the modernism school. It deconstructed, decomposed this modernism school. And this way it signaled, for example, that this modernism school is not by no means adequate in the modern context. We can also speak about some post-war Western experience which is not known to us, which we are not familiar to. There is some gap, for example. We know about the Bauhaus experience, and this experience is familiar to us because of the mass culture experience. But the post-war experience is not known to us. The post-war period, the schools which were created after the war in Bologna and some other academies, I think that they stemmed from the fact that by that time, by that moment, the modern art culture took shape in a very complex system of different principles. We can speak about a phenomena which is called the system of the modern art. In 1990s, I had an opportunity to speak a lot at different didactical seminars and symposia and travel a lot around the world, around the country. Sometimes I also visited the Eastern European countries and the Baltic states. I was invited to deliver different lectures. Especially sometimes it was done in the framework of some workshops or seminars. And usually I delivered the same lecture. Sometimes I varied it a bit, but still I prefer to speak about the system of the modern art. And in the Russian Humanitarian or Liberal Arts University, I had to deliver the same lecture, but I was speaking much longer. We even can speak that it was a special course which I delivered. But for the post-communism space environment, it was very important to bring to the light this very experience which was previously unknown. I started the lecture with disclosing the secrets of the arts workshops. I thought that this disclosing of secrets was very important. It was very important especially for the artist's mentality. And I thought it was very important to explain to the audience, to the young artists, the interest that this modern act, modern art, is not a strategic tool. For instance, different tools which were used during the Soviet period, they are efficient only if people understand how this gesture, how this tool would really act or perform in the health system of the modern art. I tried to explain how the modern art, which was actually a coined term, that the modern art practice is something of a system which is of very complicated character, which has very complicated constitutional ties and links inside. So this type of didactism, of system didactism, it had different versions, different modifications, as far as I know. Some versions, some modifications were critical or analytical ones, and in that case, if we speak that didactism reveal it, manifest itself in some practice, art practice, then the system didactism manifested itself in institutional criticism. The system of education was construed on explaining to the painter, to the artist, the institutional context in which he is to act, and that's why the painter, the artist, was guided by this autonomy, by this context of production, so to say. And the criticism was the main point in that respect. There was also some pragmatic direction, pragmatic version, option of didactical environment, which meant that a painter, an artist, was somehow a manager of his own work, of his own creativity. So this science, this branch of science, taught him how to sell himself out. And Mark Rosler, partner and participant of a very interesting project, which would be spoken about by Anton Vidogl. In Nicosia, they are preparing Manifesto 6, and Mark Rosler would be one of the leaders, one of the creators of this very project, of this very school. Marta decomposed in one of her features, one of her articles, this very type of a system, type of an art or artistic didactism, which teaches artists or painters how to maneuver between different items of the artist landscape. So, the project Manifesto 6 is now a reality, and it meant that the exhibition became a real school, and one of the leitmotifs became also the didactism, and I think that there are great consequences of this fact. So, now we see some results of artistic experience of the previous years. Advanced-garde and postmodernism experience is not adequate if we speak about the modern context. Alexander Sasha is absolutely right when he made reference to Robert Fleck article. I read it yesterday and reread it actually, and it's a very interesting article about a real explosion of different ideas, of different initiatives and proposals, which take shape of artist didactism, which take shape of some new types of institutions which face different challenges within the art education. I think that we have such a phenomena in Austria, in France, in other European countries. And this very new, very untraditional landscape, artistic landscape, artistic didactism landscape is very important, is very interesting. And I believe that Jörg Schellheim will speak in detail about that, because it is dedicated, it is depicted, it is described in Documenta 12. And in the Documenta 12 there is a whole series of different references to such initiatives which were launched in Eastern Europe. And getting ready for this very lecture, for this very my presentation, for my today's speech, I suddenly remembered that in mid-90s such kinds of initiatives were launched in Moscow as well. I mean OHN, Unified Artistic Workshops, in the premises of the then Center of Modern Art. In 1993 or 1994, I launched an initiative which was called the Workshop of Creators Workshop, and the next year, this very Creators Workshop found different partners, and some other initiatives were launched. For example, Boris Vukhanov Director's Workshop, Evgeny Aksa Art Workshop, and a whole series of different other master classes. And Yelena Gajina, who is present here in the audience, she can prove that this was a very complex, a very untraditional approach, very untraditional project, which covered architecture and design and the creative filmmaking and different other creative approaches to curator propagation, proliferation. So if we try to realize what the specification of such initiatives is, then in brief I would say it is as follows. We should say that they are very much flexible, they are very much self-sufficient. These initiatives, to a great extent, were very interesting. Not only senior artists took place in, or elderly artists took place in these initiatives. These were not especially some artists who had great experience, which made them to share their experience, to share their knowledge, and synthesize their experience and pass it on to young artists, to young painters. Young people, young artists take an active part in such initiatives, in such projects. It is not so much the passing on of the knowledge, but it is some co-generation. We do not speak here about teaching somebody, but here we speak about co-teaching, core education, about co-learning, so to say, mutual learning. So the didactism should be seen as one of the ways or means of learning, of education. It's not some very tough or unflexible structure. It is very, very flexible. Here we speak about some very proactive interaction. That's why the structure of such schools is anti-academic. Sometimes it involves the painters and artists who have some initial knowledge or initial education, traditional education, but those who feel that they are located somehow on the sideways of the traditional direction, traditional methods. Such initiatives, they involve artists who are not satisfied with the traditional education. And these schools, they did not aspire to form or to make such a nice and sweet artist or a manager of himself, a manager who would then fit very well the system of the modern art and who would build the modern relations with different structures of the modern market. On the contrary, such schools, such initiatives, they aspire to create some alternative circulation of the art production and art values, to create some alternative environment, alternative space. This experience manifests itself not in criticism of institutions, different institutions. It is not an attempt to create your to see your practice as a criticism of current and modern institutions, art institutions. But this is an exodus, what the modern critics say an exodus. As my son says, just to forget about the system of the modern art and to create some other dimension, some other art environment, to make an exodus, real exodus from the traditional system. Looking through different other documents, I looked through the interviews which Anton Vidokon made with Boris Groys. I was a bit confused after reading this interview, because Anton Vidokol very thoroughly questioned Boris Vidokol about different aspects, and he is a part of this didactical project as well. And Boris is a very sophisticated person, and Vidokol managed to get from Boris not some interesting blocks, but a very thorough story or history of the Moscow underground environment and Moscow conceptualist school. Anton seemed to be very much interested in how Moscow artists managed to make this very exodus, this very exit, not how they managed to criticize the Soviet system, but how they created their own system, their own autonomous and independent system. Anton, as a person who was born in Moscow, but who missed this very experience of the Moscow underground scene platform, I think that this was very much interesting to Anton himself personally, but I then realized that it was also very interesting from the methodological standpoint, because the Moscow conceptual school for the first time in history managed to make this exodus, to create very, very complicated system, but self-sufficient system, self-sufficient environment, which lived quite on the different islands, so to say, with the contemporary art. Here we deal with quite different type of a product. The artists, the painters who create such type of an environment of the space, as we put it, zone or the environment of solidarity, autonomous zone of solidarity. These artists, these painters, they create quite a different type of practice than those artists who are taught by the traditional schools. I mean the Soviet art schools, and as well the Western schools, which were created on the wave of the neo-advance guard movement. I mean that, for instance, there is a mixture of different roles, education roles, such as a professor and a student, a curator and critic.
An exhibition versus a school, and I said that this friend of film generated this sort of experience. This made it possible for 1/6 of the manifesto having the last 10 years climax of an institutional success. Surely this is the greatest success of the 1990s. All of a sudden, they totally reject the exhibition, and what they do is actually limit the exhibition by the didactic process alone. When a curator becomes a teacher, because the person who creates a didactic process. Well, so, I suppose, again, I promised that my presentation would be like an introduction, that I will set a context, maybe. Well, I suppose I did what I I described the context that makes it possible such projects. It doesn't make them too eccentric, but makes them pretty organic and something that flows naturally from the experience of relevant of the relevant artistic process. If we try to understand in a wider, if we try to grasp a wider context for such artistic practices, such artistic projects, I suppose we have to pay attention to the fact that in the very period when artistic production evolved in this dimension, in this area, but at the most time, I suppose most of those present attended attended Soviet schools, and we know what Marxist determinism stands for. This is a part of a wider production dynamic in society. Production this day evolved towards the area, and indeed, if, I wouldn't be even quoting names, because it's a huge layer of contemporary literature that analyzes the axiom today is that heavy industrial production is to a less extent, at the very least, its most cutting edge forms. They are not so much producing a product, rather, what they do is produce social connections. Many people today say that contemporary economy is an economy of effects, affectation. They're producing some sort of social emotions. Modern economy produces what other theoreticians forms of life, not products tangible that could be bought, that you could own, or somehow in any way own. What they do, they produce some types of human existence. Contemporary production is called bioproduction, and modern policy is called biopolicy. And I don't suppose I would be exaggerating much, because many other people have allowed themselves this sort of exaggeration. It's more esteemed and respected venture than your humble servant. Is to link this sort of authentic experience to this sort of this type of social dynamics. Well, in other words, what we have to do today is biodidactics, bioeducation, and at this stage, summing up my extended introduction, or rather my presentation, which I wanted to focus on introducing our discussion into a wider context. What I would like to do is word some four, give a wording for some four. It took me a long time to shape the system. In the long run, I limited myself with four criteria for the contemporary artistic didactics. Surely we could produce them more, or we could detail them into more, but I suppose I couldn't make it less than four criteria. So in my view, contemporary didactics, biodidactics, if we, and it is clearly inevitable, if the didactics reject making compulsory training in samples for imitation or some models for emulation, tries to introduce the methods of critical conscientization or some sort of effective management. If this didactics refers to mutual co-production of various types of life, then surely what it should practice is some totally new principles of organization of
production. As early as
the early 1990s, as we read after McLuhan, that medium is a message. Well, I suppose today, the situation something to the contrary. A situation when the didactic process begins to create types of life, then the message begins to become more important rather than those forms, be they linguistic or methodological or didactic, that the artist decides to use. Indeed, if we look at the experience of the most interesting contemporary artists, what we value in them is not so much the mastering of this or that specific language or technique, be they visual, performance, or you name it,
what
we are painting, what we are finding interesting about them is that they are authors of that sort of individual technique, skill. We're interested in this because we don't really have enough new terms. We have scarcity of terminology, and because we don't have any better term, I would continue to use an old term. So that is why makes contemporary artists interesting, excuse me, is their position. Indeed, the means that the modern artists employ, they really switch them freely. Sometimes they invent new language, new techniques, new forms. But what produces results is their position. So the point of contemporary artistic didactics is not so much imparting some universally working principles to the students, whereas the point of it is a certain experience of shaping individual positions. A singular, if we use the terminology that has been very much in place in the new terminology. At the same time, what follows inevitably is that contemporary artistic education becomes interdisciplinary. This is a thing that was not at all in Soviet schools, but was not so much pertinent to the schools that sprang up in the West after the war. Now, being somewhat inbuilt into the mutually crossing didactic initiatives. I can give you an example of that when I worked with Polyphonics in setting up agendas and programs for curators, we thought it was absolutely mandatory for teaching them not only the history of exhibition, art, contemporary art, but rather trying to raise it sort of against the intellectual scale. We wouldn't dwell so much on the theory, artistic theory of art or history of philosophy, but what we thought was absolutely mandatory for a modern scholar, for a person who would be an expert in contemporary artistic practice, is to become a part of a developing, continuing process. So we suppose that this person has to study political science, because we are supposed this artist must know the history of political ideas, and being aware of what is relevant and important today, being able to establish contact with today's political political discussion. I suppose the experience of biodidactics by policy, what it suggests, or what it implies rather, it implies a totally new structure of knowledge. Point of fact, for quite a few years, the discussion between European and American universities has been in place, whether education at all be built alongside the principles of Hatzlaff put it, what can be called as phenomenon or a phenomenon at the round table that has been published in the current issue. It's what we call growing. That is when a person is like led along from the first to the last academic year, and when we make him grow, we gradually load him, if we can use the word, with some artistic knowledge from Barbizon to Aristotle and Dalida. We are giving some sort of knowledge, making it structural, linearly structured alongside some principles to provide him with knowledge of the complete system, complete information, and show him the, teach him the knowledge that will give him an exhaustive picture of the discipline which he tries to build into. But American universities, quite the opposite, are actually used to teach in the United States. and it is for myself, who was raised in the Moscow University, that was totally unexpected. Surely it was a new experience, but American universities do not suppose it is important to pursue this task. They task the absolutely opposite. Well, I might be wrong in assuming, but maybe I will be somebody who correct me, but with the Americans, they want to focus more on in-depth, well-founded analysis of a certain fragment. And what they do is immersion into some fragment of knowledge. In this respect, American education doesn't do give what we call universal, comprehensive panorama of knowledge. But it doesn't teach a person to work with knowledge. It just teaches practical skills, and it teaches them how to retrain oneself. While immersing him into a particular segment, the American system teaches the student, teaches him so that further on, he would have to work with new principles, with new values, new life positions that he would have to address and use, because they're not there, because they may be just in coming into place. And maybe at this stage, the student is just the witness of the crop up. So in order to work with this new fragment of experience, he will have to define himself. And universal and comprehensive approach doesn't do knowledge for him. So American system of education, being more or less pragmatic, taught its teaching its graduates to this, what we call adaptation skills, in the context of a rapidly changing and dynamically adapting world. But to what extent, indeed, this principle is really effective and efficient in the excellent situation? In what way is it really adequate to these new tasks that our education offers? In point of fact, I feel that it is not adequate. This is my impression. I feel that this sort of shaping the position has a sort of horizontal vector, not a vertical vector. And to some extent, our education should be oriented towards suggesting or proposing a person who is immersed into the process of education, shall we put it, a student, or rather we could say a participant of our education process. What we must offer him is a practical, concentrated model in a rather serious way, and which will be well founded in the history of art. The question, as I feel it, this should be the fundamental difference from the academic traditional system of education, the one that we are accustomed to in our Moscow, Russian, Soviet universities. And the difference should be that when helping, when we acquaint the person with the knowledge, we at the same time arm him with the methods and skills to utilize this universality, this comprehensive approach, letting him know that this universal model is indeed a construction within itself, a construct, and construct rather. And when we this participant of this bioeducation process graduates beyond education establishment, all he has to do is probably withhold his own position and being able to deconstruct it by himself and critically view it. Being fully aware that this well-founded notion may to some extent be revived. The last point I would like to make, I suppose it's very important, is that the problem of a teacher, what should a figure of a teacher today be like, day and night? On the one hand, what we have...
Now the charismatic models of the charismatic professor, to some extent today it's quite evident, it's quite obvious that it's very popular, and I think that there might be a suggestion of a charismatic teacher, charismatic professor being proposed. I think it would be very relevant today, and today's situation is very prone to bear such models. On the other hand, we have a didactic model. When a teacher is regarded as a manager of knowledge, as some narrow expert, narrow specialist who passes on to the students a real set of methodological tools which might be helpful to him during his professional work in the labor market, which would help him to find right orientation, right direction in this market. So this is a very pragmatic, not charismatic person. No ideological or no other features are typical of such a figure in this model. So the very experience which I've been speaking about, it leads us to such a model as a biodidactics or biological didactics, and probably a professor might be quite different and it will not fit either model. It's a teamwork, a critical work, an experience of common or mutual work. It's an experience of a dialogue which may result in creating a position, establishing not a general, not a team position, but an individual position of every participant of this process. I think that in such a situation, the pure manager per se is not efficient at all, and a charismatic teacher, is regarded as a paragon of craftsmanship, is not appropriate at all either. So suddenly a professor should have some authority, should be respected, because otherwise he will not provide any impetus for a dialogue. He will not facilitate this dialogue. So a professor should have some abilities, some skills, some capabilities. So this person should be respected. Respect, I think, would be the very right term in that sense. So he should promote the spirit of solidarity with the tasks, with the objectives, with the different horizons of knowledge which he proposes. But suddenly, to the extent that the whole work supposes the dialogue, the debates, the discussion. But here we do not speak about anything absolute. And I think that these very four items, four vectors or provisions, certainly we can divide them or split them into a great multitude of some other vectors. And the structure may be more or less flexible, but still, I think that these four vectors are very important, are quite sufficient in order to see the tasks and objectives from a new standpoint. I think that these four vectors are very much fundamental. And the last thing which I would like to mention to raise now, Bauhaus made some conclusions of the 10 years of the work of the advance guard. An academy made the conclusions of the work of the Renaissance school. And now when we are speaking about these new tasks, about these new objectives of the modern art, about new horizons which the system of education faces, we should answer the question to what extent they stem from the current or the modern art practice, and are there any traditions Are there any principles and any directions which I've raised today? For example, can we tie them with some relations of our interrelation? At the exhibition of Art Moscow, for example, do we see some logical consequences? Do we see some logical conclusions there? So this is my question, and I would like to end my presentation with this question. Yes, very, very interesting presentation, and in that case, I think we'll not be able to ask any additional questions, but I think that he delivered quite a long and interesting lecture. So let's think it over, because Victor will soon be back.